Session number 10812, rule 4.
General Foote, rule 4.
Go on.
You said that you couldn't get onto it.
Couldn't get onto it, that's right. However, I saw they were putting on some cattle trucks. So without thinking, I shouted to the others to get into them. I could have bitten my tongue off when I realised I'd spoken in English. However, everyone else was too busy trying to get onto the train and to take any notice of us. We got into a truck which had a wooden bench, and I sat next to a German soldier all the way to Milan. He did not speak to us, and I certainly didn't speak to him. Fortunately, he must have thought I was an Italian peasant. At Milan, we handed over our tickets at the barrier, and luckily were not asked to show our identity documents, although there were fascist priests at the barrier. The young Italian who had travelled with us then led us to his flat. That evening, we were visited by a very nice young woman who told us the action party would be prepared to get us to Switzerland. She spoke good English, and she told us that next morning her brother would pick us up in his car and would drive us to Milan North Station. We would stop outside the station, where she would be waiting on the pavement. As we passed, she would give us tickets to Varese. We could follow on to the train and also get into the same carriage, but we were not to speak to her. At Varese, it would be dark, so she could have a, she would have a small torch with a green, a white, and a red side. If the light was on green, everything would appear to be all right, and she would follow her out of the station. If the light was on white, we could still follow her, but be prepared to make our own way out. If the light was on red, we would not follow her and carry on our own. After leaving the station, we would walk about 5 miles when a German would stop her and say a phrase in Italian. She would answer with another phrase. She would then leave us, and we were to follow the man. Everything went according to plan, except that when we arrived at Varese, the platform was full of German soldiers. However, the torch was on white, so we were able to follow the young woman out of the station. We heard afterwards that the German soldiers were going to the funeral of some of their comrades who had been killed by the partisans a few days before. When we met the man, our guard, whose name was Ray Ferrers, left us as planned, and we followed the man. He did not speak a word until we walked about another 5 miles. Then he opened the gate to a drive which obviously led up to a very large house. When he closed the gate behind us, he said in perfect English, "Now I'll introduce myself. I'm Senator Lapiani. I've been a cotton broker in Manchester for 25 years. If there's anything I can do to help you, I'm only too pleased." He then led us up to the house, which was a lovely villa, and after we'd had a wash and a drink, he asked us if we'd like a meal before we went on. Although this was the 16th of November, 1943, and the Italians had just been knocked out of the war, we fed off what appeared to be gold plate with flunkies wearing white wigs to service. After dinner, the head gardener was summoned and asked if everything had been prepared to take us to the Swiss frontier. He replied, "Yes, everything was prepared." We said goodbye to Senor Della Piani and went off with the gardener. After some distance, we came to a small hut, and the gardener told us to wait inside while we went to see if the guards were ready. It had been snowing, and after about 10 minutes, the gardener came back with a very long face and said that owing to the snow, our footmarks would show up, and as a German patrol visited the guards regularly, they would want to know who'd been there. We were somewhat taken aback, but by this time I knew the Italians pretty well. So I produced a €1,000 note and asked if that would make any difference. His face lit up, and he said he'd go round and see. After a short time, he came back and said he had found another way. So we followed him to the frontier. We were approaching the frontier when suddenly the Italian soldiers, two Italian soldiers jumped out, and we were challenged. For a moment, we thought we'd been sold and were preparing to run for it. However, the gardener said it was all right and beckoned us to follow the Italian soldiers to the actual frontier. At this point, the frontier was a stone wall about 8 foot high with a barbed wire fence on top. In the wall was a culvert through which a small stream flowed, and which was filled up because of barbed wire. The Italian soldiers pulled out the coils of barbed wire, and we crawled through into Switzerland.
Going back to the Western Desert, you were mentioning the boxes that the British and Imperial forces fought from. What did you personally think of that box system which was adopted in the Western Desert?
Well, I think it served its purpose at the start, but once the German armour had broken out right round, then they became a liability because they were stationary, and you either had to evacuate them, in which case you would be totally at the mercy of the German armoured units as you evacuated. And I think that the boxes were actually a mistake. They depended, you see, on the Germans not being able to break through the minefields, and if they did, then they would have to attack the boxes, but necropractors, they didn't attempt to attack the boxes. What they did was get right through to the rear, and then we had to come out of the boxes in order to take them on. And so in that case it was rather a mistake, I think.
And also the other question about the Western Desert, the Tobruk surrender, you were saying that Klopper had advice from his politicians about surrendering, but how did you and your brother officers from the British regiments feel when Tobruk was surrendered?
Well, we felt absolutely let down. I mean, we were, and there was nothing one could do excepting, because we'd already lost all our tanks, or most of them, there's nothing we could do to carry on the fight. And therefore, all one could do was to try and escape.
Did you feel that Tobruk could have fought on?
Oh, without a doubt. I think that we'd have been overrun, quite obviously, in the end, but we'd have had a good fight beforehand.
You described how you walked away from Tobruk with a party.
Yes.
Do you remember who was in that party?
My headquarters staff.
So they weren't brother officers?
No.
Did you have a sergeant with you?
Yes.
How big was the party?
There were four of us.
Any of them wounded?
No. No, the only casualty we had was when I fell down and broke my ankle. They all went to courses of POW camps.
A general question about the quality of the German equipment in the Western Desert, because we often hear that the German panzers were supposed to be so much superior to the British equipment.
Yes, well, that was true. You see, we were outgunned. By that I mean that the German armour could penetrate us at a longer range than we could penetrate them with our two-pounders, which is all we had at that time. And the Germans had a much better gun, although it wasn't as good as they got later on, but it was sufficiently good to be able to knock us out at a longer range we could knock them out at.
Was there any difference between the German tanks and the British tanks in terms of the actual defensive armour?
No, I should say we were better off there. In fact, the tanks I had, the Matildas, had 70mm armour bases, and I wouldn't be here today if it hadn't. I mean, we were hit so many times that they just didn't penetrate. And so we were lucky in that way. But if we'd had our new armour a year earlier, we'd have probably seen the Germans all, because this went up in sort of cycles. So the British had certain armour bases and a type of gun which could penetrate a certain distance, whereas the Germans also had the same, but it alternated between the two. And we were much slower in producing new modelling of equipment than the Germans were.
Was the German 88mm gun as good as people say it was?
Oh yes, without doubt. It was by far the best gun at that time in either army.
What was so good about it?
You've got to remember, it was an anti-aircraft gun which they had converted to a field role. And we had the equivalent anti-aircraft guns, but we didn't convert them to a field role. Whether we could have done or not, of course, I haven't a clue.
When you were involved in the actual fighting in the Western Desert in June 1942, it was a very critical time for the British position there.
Yes.
What was the morale like then?
Morale was very good. I mean, we knew at the time that we were just as good as the Germans, providing that we could take them on at an equivalent distance apart, so that our tanks and their guns were more or less equal.
Did you ever come across General Auchinleck?
Yes. He was a very fine commander, and if he'd been commanding for the actual army, then I think it might have been very different.
Instead of being at Cairo?
Yes, he was at Cairo. The trouble was that the can't remember his name now, but the commander of the army actually fighting the war kept his headquarters much too far back, and he never got the information back in time to make a sensible plan.